Welcome to the David Bowie's Ghost podcast. My name is Jen.
And I'm Daniel. And on this podcast, we explore the mystical realms of channeling through Jen and I's experiences communing with the other side.
As well as our shared love of music, art, and the sacred connection between creativity and healing.
If you like what you hear, please join our community on Patreon to gain access to the various offerings we are guided to share.
We invite you to be our companions on this ride as we embrace our own strange design.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Daniel.
So we are back recording after a week and a half or so and some various travels from between each of us. And Jen, you are currently in Denver after seeing our mutual love, Trey Anastasio and his new trio. And this is our first virtual or remote recording via Zoom. So we're playing around, we're experimenting with the format and seeing how we can accommodate our lifestyles and experiences. And I'm excited to see where we go today. So I'll just turn it over to you, Jen, and see how you're doing.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm in Denver, and I just saw Trey's trio, like you said, at the Mission Ballroom. And it was my first time in that space. And I really loved the venue. There was a big sort of ball in the middle of the room that was like glowing the whole time. And Trey at one point.
Like a disco ball?
Yeah, it was kind of like a disco ball, but it lit up. It was very beautiful. And Trey at one point actually asked for them just to keep the ball on the entire time. And usually it shows my eyes are shut most of the time. And I'm trying to get to a place where I open my eyes a little bit more. Because I feel like, you know, it's not only art, you know, to be heard, but it's also, you know, art to be seen that's around us. So trying to kind of mesh the two worlds together, especially as, you know, there's channeling going on and all sorts of stuff, it can be a little bit overwhelming. But I was glad to have that gigantic ball in the center of the room.
It's definitely something that I navigate. I mean, we've talked about this before, just in our conversations, like I'm rarely looking at you because it's easy and you might be thinking, is he even interested in what I'm saying? But it's actually easier for me to channel, tune in, access information when I'm not always like looking someone in the eye. Mm-hmm. And I navigate that at shows too. If I want to, I mean, usually for me, if I close my eyes, it's going to be a more intense inner experience. Yeah. I'm going to have more access to what's going on inside me. If I open my eyes, I'm going to be more engaged with the external world. And obviously that comes with the cool visuals and seeing the band and maybe seeing my friends in the crowd. But yeah, it's like, I'm definitely navigating that spectrum of like, where do I want to be? Do I want to be completely in? Do I want to be navigating some balance? And yeah, so I relate to that.
Yeah. And I close my eyes half the time when you and I are doing these. So I actually thought about it before and I had my sunglasses just in case. I decided to keep my eyes shut the entire time.
Jen just put on her sunglasses, so
they're here just in case.
Just in case.
Blending those, that inner and outer world. That was definitely something I was thinking about a little bit last night. And Yeah, and Desron Douglas, he is...
That's the bassist, right?
Bassist, yes. He was incredible. And
I've heard that. I've heard good reviews.
Yeah, so that was really fun to see. And you could just tell Trey was such a fan of Desron, and he was just so into it the entire time, just into him. And it was just like, you know, you could feel Trey's love for him, and obviously for Fishman, we know, you know, their love, but it was just, it was very special to see him really, you know, just being blown away by this other musician that was on stage.
I think that's one of the greatest things about Trey is you get to see him geek out while also being the rock star. And he can play the role of the fan and the rock star at the same time, which is always a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, he was, definitely a fan. And, you know, it really made me, focus in on Desron, because I'd only seen him maybe one other time up in Asheville when they played there last year. And I think it's hard for me to focus in on other musicians when I'm so used to maybe focusing in on Trey. And so it's been nice for me to kind of start like releasing just that interest in watching Trey and watching the other musicians, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I've navigated that. I think every Fish fan navigates that for themselves. You know, I've definitely always been an obsessive Trey fan, but you know, over the years I've loved tuning into Mike's bass, to Page's keys. And when I started playing the drums, I started realizing how amazing Fishman was. I mean, I knew he was amazing, but I started to learn for myself. Like I'm still a very much beginner, and I still can't really play Fish songs because Fishman is insane. He's always doing like 20 things at once. And so I just came to appreciate him so much that when I see Fish or I'm listening to Fish, I'm always now have an ear for John. So yeah. And it's just interesting where you focus your attention and what the experience becomes and what gets excluded from how locked in you become to one instrument, one element of the music, one element of your experience, one person's energy, which is obviously playing a big role in the kinds of experiences you're having and how tuned in we get to one person's energy.
I was just thinking about Fishman and just this like reoccurring thought that I have now when I'm listening to Fish and I'm watching them play, is I just keep getting this feeling of he is just the heartbeat of the band. And that's sort of where I've like placed his sound now. It's just sort of like this heartbeat.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I really like the show. There were a lot of new songs, and they were very unique, and each one really led to like an incredible jam. Like I felt like the actual like ballroom was like lifting off into space a few times.
I love that disco space.
So all in all, I think it was definitely worth traveling out here for. I was definitely feeling a call to be here. And yeah, I'm glad I made the little trek over from San Diego.
Yeah. Which just presences us to your recent travels and just the shakeup of your physical environment. I don't know if you'd like to chat a little bit about that and how it's feeling for you since you had been pretty not rooted, but temporarily placed in LA and West Hollywood and all that energy for a period of time. And now it's kind of been a cracking of that temporary seal and stepping out into a new adventure, unsure of where you're going to land. I mean, I've been rooted here for a little bit, but sense that my time to crack the seal is coming as well. So I don't know. Should we spend a little time there?
Yeah, absolutely. So right. I had landed in Los Angeles. And I, you know, as we've spoken about before, I've really, you know, you and I both feel sort of led in these directions, right? And it's just sort of this following of our path, and things, you know, open up when they're supposed to. And I had an incredible experience in West Hollywood, and sort of this last part of my journey in Los Angeles, I ended up at the church that my grandfather was the minister for almost 15 years. And I just felt this strong draw to sort of go there and feel his presence. And, you know, you and I had spoken about this before. I think the last time I went to church, I was probably a kid. And I went with, you know, probably for like a Christmas type thing with my mom. And, but anyway, so I was just drawn to go there. And I was really moved by the energy, and I could feel him within that space. And I was just getting this strong feeling that I was supposed to leave there and go down and visit some of my family in San Diego. And I had mentioned that to you as well, that I was just getting this this feeling, I don't know if it's from my grandfather, but I feel like it is, to go see the other portion of my family that lives in San Diego, and I haven't seen them for a while. So I listened, and I worked my way down there, and I really felt like I was in the right place when I landed there, to be around family and to be in the space where my grandfather actually passed away. It was actually at my aunt's house, and I'm actually staying in that room where he passed away. And I could, again, just feel him. I could feel him really communicating with me, and it made me feel like I was just being like washed over with love. And so that's kind of where I'm at right this second. And I'm excited to go back there and see where this next, you know, part of my journey goes. But yeah, I'm definitely on a spiritual path, and I don't see myself getting off of it. Like, this is sort of my journey. This is my path.
there's no getting off that train. There's no getting off that train once you get on. And yeah, we've just talked a lot about energy and different energy sources, from people, places, and things, where we spend our time, where we focus our attention, how we start to recognize our own energy, how it's feeling, if it's feeling heavy or light or tense, mm-hmm. or flowing or open-hearted or constricted, etc. And as we tend to get more sensitized to that on this path, however it looks for you or for anyone else, it's, you know, there's not just one way, but it tends to lead us inward. It tends to resensitize our awareness, our mind, to the energy state of our body. And then as a result, sensitize us to how other energies are impacting the state of our body, whether it's a music venue with lots of fans or a band that we love or an individual musician that we shift attention from or a person we're living with or a place that we're living. And then, so for you, I mean, talk about putting yourself in, putting yourself in environments to continue opening that connection to the divine, to the spiritual realm. I mean, to be in the room where your grandfather passed away is clearly rife with opportunity, or to be in a church. And yeah, we talked a bit about, I mean, I grew up with Jewish ancestry, so I was in a different context, you know, Hebrew school and temple and things like that. But going revisiting places of worship without after having sort of cleared some of the conditioning or framework or structure that we grew up with, to sort of re-engage with it simply not just as like a religious institution, but just as a spiritual and high vibrational environment, can totally change the experience. It's some, you know, you may not get as caught up in the language or content, but in the feeling of being there, in the energy of it, how it feels in your body, which to me is more important than necessarily what is said, you know, and this sort of podcast and this relationship included, like how it feels. You know, I don't spend much time thinking about what I'm saying as much as how I'm feeling. And that really is across all, everything I do, all relationships. Because if I'm feeling aligned, chances are what I'm saying is aligned, even if it's not always 100% true or whatever. Like, you know, we can change what we say, we can change what we mean. But if we stay in the feeling, stay in the alignment, things usually go well. And so surrounding ourselves, putting ourselves in position in environments that feel good is like typically a valuable and beneficial thing to do. So you've been doing that. You've been able to notice the contrast of how it feels to be in your aunt's place. I believe you said you're close to some mountains, maybe some water too. I'm not sure. Which is certainly a different energy than Hollywood.
Yeah. Yes. It is a different energy. It's much more calm, and, you know, I really like the contrast. You know, I like feeling these different energies, right? These like extremes and then this quiet time. One definitely makes me appreciate the other. And, you know, I think, as you know, people who are creative, they really do need that contrast and a lot of quiet downtime. You know, I mean, that's like the time where we can go inside and explore. And sometimes it doesn't really look like we're even doing anything, you know, but it's that time where we're actually processing, we're actually doing a lot of work. Because a lot of it is settling those different energies. You said something about, religion and space. So my, dad, decided the family was Jewish. And so I had that part, growing up too, you know, so I kind of grew up with everything and seeing all different types of, you know, religion and, different types of celebrations. And, so there was, you know, I was exposed to a lot of different, you know, things and ideas. And, I just think that there are, being in that spiritual space, being in that church, I think it meant something, you know, different to me than maybe it felt to some other people that were in there. right? I felt a spiritual energy, whether or not I was attached to, you know, that religion, you know, it was different. But I think it's important that we understand that, you know, we can all feel spiritual, you know, within this spiritual
state. Energy is non-denominational. We can filter it through the lens of whatever creed or philosophy we ascribe right. to, but it's not inherent in any one of those things.
Right.
And I'll just backtrack on the creative piece. I think if you honor, you know, we're all creators. So if, you know, some may be further along on the spectrum, but I didn't think of myself that way for a long time. I just did kind of think I was lazy and like, I didn't always have energy to do a lot of things. Other times I had a ton of energy. I spent a lot of time alone, but not necessarily creating, just kind of stuck in my own emotions. So when I started to honor that creative energy, it became clear that my nature was guiding me inward to get space, to get freedom from other people's emotions and energy so that I could tune into my own and sensitize to that and create. And to that point about contrast, like, yeah, we've spoken about this before. And on some level, that's kind of what the human experience gives us on this planet, is the opportunity to experience contrast, light and dark, you know, a range of emotion energies, to then discern like what we prefer and practice going toward the ones we want. And that contrast is what sparks growth if we say yes to it and if we open up to it. And so that's certainly part of the journey. And then learning about our nature, learning about, you know, some people get really filled up by being in really social environments. I love, you know, feeling part of community and connected to community and like, you know, live music shows included. But yeah, I need a lot of time. And sometimes, you know, that time is just spent like sitting on my couch. I mean, I could call it meditating, but sometimes it's just staring. And like my energy needs that. My body needs that. Just my nervous system needs that to allow in, you know, that higher guidance, or just to make space for that inspiration, or and just to get clear.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about contrast, and I think, you know, something else that I'm thinking about a lot is this contrast between, you know, mind and soul. And, you know, meditating, you know, is getting in touch with your soul, and, you know, and finding that balance, right? And I know we talk about this a lot, but I think it's so important to focus in on strengthening really our soul. You know, we do a lot of work, especially, you know, growing up, to strengthen our brain, right? And we go to school and, you know, we're learning all of this information. You know, I just feel like there should be so much more time spent on really strengthening your soul and, you know, learning to meditate when you're younger and having yoga in schools. You know, there should be, I feel, more of there should be more balance there. You know, we should be spending just as much time with our soul, if not more. You know, we spend so much time working our brain, and then later we're trying to quiet it down. I'm thinking about school because I went to my cousin Celeste's middle school graduation, and I was watching, you know, all these kids graduate, and I was remembering how hard, you know, that sort of time in, you know, life was, like being like 13 or 12 and going through puberty and then going through that, like, you know, really awkward stage, and, you know, and then just really having to like grind it out in school and like strengthen your brain. And, you know, what about your soul? What about your soul?
I agree. 1000%. And I hated school, hated it. I struggled a lot. I had a pretty, you know, I would use the word traumatized brain, but like that, it's a loaded phrase to say it that way. I just had a lot going on. I, you know, got tons of diagnoses as a kid, ADHD, OCD, depression, anxiety, all sorts of labels that I don't find particularly useful or poignant anymore. But it's safe to say they pointed to something going on, some stress, some distress, some heavy distress, some emotional distress, some difficulty navigating my brain. And like, I could not pay attention. I mean, I just couldn't. There was so much going on in my body. I had so much discomfort that, it was just really a challenge for me. I did not think I was a smart person. I had all these negative beliefs that were shaping about me because there was just so much unprocessed stuff. And I was such an emotion-laden person. Like, emotions always came first. But yeah, you don't get taught about that kind of thing. My family didn't really have the tools for that. A lot of people's families didn't and don't. And when you go further back generations, it didn't get better in terms of that knowledge and awareness. And yeah, school was, you know, you were learning math or social studies or whatever. And I just couldn't, you know, I had a connection to English and writing and, I was pretty good at that naturally, but like, yeah, I just really struggled. And yeah, I agree. I mean, what if kids learned about the breath? What if kids learned about how to tune into their feelings, into their heart space? And I'll get a little nerdy for a second because I was recently, just for a second, not like I'm not nerdy, literally all the time nerdy, but I was revisiting that conversation between what I don't want to say I think about this, but I listen to these ideas a lot within myself about what is the brain, what is the mind, what is the soul. And Bashar has a pretty Bashar, the probably talked about this enough already, but the sort of the entity that is channeled by this guy Daryl Anka. And Bashar talks about he speaks very clearly, which is kind of refreshing, about what he refers to as the higher mind. You know, some may refer to it as the higher self or the soul, and what he will then call the physical mind, which I would interpret as the ego, personality, thinking mind. What we all kind of think of when we say mind, which I think some people conflate as brain. I would differentiate the two and say mind is like all of what you think you are, you know, personality, emotions, thoughts, beliefs. Brain is like the supercomputer that sort of receives, translates, and transmits all that information. It's like, you know, the brain is like the computer that processes all of what we see, interprets the information. So then we, as the mind, like perceive it all. It's, you know, it's probably a longer nitty jargony conversation about the nitty gritty differences as I perceive them, but safe to say, just based on what you were referring to, like, yeah, most of us don't acknowledge a higher mind might exist, an aspect that sort of sees our life path or sees the potentials for our life path already playing out in time and space, because in this higher realm, this higher aspect of us, you know, time is not linear, you know, so past, present, and future can merge. So that's why we can get clairvoyant hits. We can get foreshadowing. We can get all these intuitions about what might be coming, because time isn't playing out the way our physical mind thinks it is, you know, linear, like in that way. And so, you know, Bashar would speak to sort of waking up to the idea that we are more than just our thinking mind. We are more than just our brain. We have this aspect of ourselves. We can call it maybe a divine aspect, a spiritual aspect of ourselves that has more wisdom than just the sort of individual life that we've been living and perceiving as separate, and like thinking we need to like make all these decisions and figure all these things out. Like, actually, what if the role of the mind, of sort of the thinking mind, was just to stay present and perceive what was happening now versus getting so caught up in like past and future? And if we trusted more of this higher part of ourselves to like, to guide us, to lead the way, to bring in signs and synchronicities, to sort of send down that information for the brain to translate so that we could, you know, just trust more, just practice trusting more. Like what, you know, kids kind of do this naturally. I think they get conditioned to then start to worry about future and regret past and all this stuff. But if you really let kids go uninhibited, they just run the fuck around and do what they want and can be naturally more trusting. Now, I talk a lot about ancestral trauma too. So kids don't necessarily come into the world blank slates, but you know, it without maybe the trauma, they're free to just honor their present experience, go from one thing to the next and like kind of naturally trust that like they'll be safe, they'll be provided for, they'll be taken care of, they'll end up where they need to end up, they'll be fed when they're hungry. And that, you know, if we can take care of some of the survival-based needs, and obviously not everyone has that privilege, but if we can, and if we can like practice doing that, particularly as adults, when we have the freedom to like take care of ourselves in that way, mm-hmm. we would be a lot better off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more our brains work and the more our brains take over, the more I see our body just becoming like a prison cell for our soul. And I think the quieter we make our mind and the louder we make our soul,
yeah,
our body can become more of a temple.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, this language is kind of harsh, but like, who's the master and who's the slave? Like, is the mind, is the thinking mind the master? Because if that's the master, like the thinking mind doesn't know what the fuck's going on. It's just trying to make sense of things, but it doesn't actually have access to all the information that it's trying to. So it's always striving to figure things out. And it takes all this power away from the body, and it definitely sort of cuts off the voice of the soul, of the higher mind or self. So the more we can practice quieting that and letting the mind, the thinking mind, serve the higher mm-hmm. mind and letting the brain serve in terms of, you know, its neural wiring. And I think there's much more capacity to our brain than we use. And a lot of the brain is sort of fear conditioned and wired for stress response. And so we rely on a lot of those like primitive mechanisms, sort of cut off from, you know, the higher frequency, you know, the brain is very powerful. So it can access these higher frequency states that allow us to channel. But if we're stuck in the trauma of like, let's say the trauma of the body, mm-hmm. we're not going to be getting anywhere near that higher connection. So yeah, if like brain, mind, and body can all serve the soul, then it's like, we'll just naturally do what we need to do to honor our highest path, to like, to respect the body when it needs care and treat it well, to quiet the mind and sort of let go of some of the beliefs that aren't serving us, because so much of this is based on the kinds of beliefs we're holding, and to sort of upgrade the brain and the nervous system to allow it to like receive that higher frequency information.
And I think there's, you know, I'm also, so I know we've talked about this before, maybe we've already talked about this today, but you know, the soul, you know, is different than, you know, the body and the mind. And, you know, I believe the soul, you know, leaves the body and, you know, goes somewhere else. And I think there are other things that sort of act as like a mask around the soul. So things like, you know, like methamphetamines, alcohol, Like, I feel like these things literally like put a cloak over the soul, and it allows just the mind to take over. It like literally like quiets down the soul. It says, go over here, and it makes the brain work, you know, even faster. So I feel like it's almost separating the two. So, you know, and the same thing goes, like we've talked about before, you know, how you take care of your body affects your soul. And, you know, things like sugar, if you become addicted to sugar, that's what your mind is thinking about. Again, it's masking your soul, and it's making it so that your mind is becoming this thing that's just even more powerful and is sort of really like directing you. And yeah, that was just this visual that I've been having. It's sort of like your soul is just literally like being like wrapped in a blanket. And
yeah. And I think like another way of saying it would be that like, if the soul aspect of you is this like non-physical aspect of you, which can vibrate naturally at a higher frequency,
right?
Then these substances sort of bring us into very low vibrational states. So like alcohol, mm-hmm. methamphetamine, et cetera, sugar. I mean, you name it, like different, you know, it can be different emotions too, like shame. It brings us further away from that divine connection, that divine knowing that we are whole and we are worthy. Right. And it brings us into the more survival based mechanisms of fear and of separateness and of scarcity and all the elements of the human experience that are more of like the darker aspects of living, of being human, and sort of the darker, the more limiting beliefs. And speaking about the brain, I'd say what it does is it traumatizes the brain. I mean, it hurts. It's you know, I think from a neuroscience perspective, they would say that that's not great for brain health. You know, getting addicted to meth is not great for your brain health.
Lots of good.
It's not going to, and I would phrase it, it's not going to like support the neural pathways for accessing those higher frequency states. It's going to keep it more in like the more primitive survival based aspects of the brain. So you almost have like tunnel vision, like, right. You know, when you get addicted to a drug, all you can really think about is getting that next drug, because it gets so tied into survival that you feel like you're going to die without it, or you can't talk to a person without it, or whatever the beliefs start to shape around this dependency. You know, one example is Adderall, because Adderall is actually a methamphetamine, but it's a legal one and probably one of the most widely abused drugs in the world because of how it has been abused for purportedly like academic performance. And I took it a lot because I had this ADHD diagnosis. So I had psychiatrists like shoving it down my throat, but I had so much anxiety and so much sensitivity in my body. I just knew I couldn't, I would get so depressed from taking it. But the beliefs that start to shape around that are like, oh, but I won't be able to study without it, or I won't be able to talk to anyone at a party without it, you know, and that's like cocaine. And so there's the physical dependency and how the brain starts to rely on that, you know, sort of those, that boost of neurotransmitters and the gut and everywhere else. And then there's the mind aspect of the beliefs that shape around it, where it's like, I'm not worthy without it. I'm not worthy without it. And that's clearly cutting you off to your soul, because your soul's truth is that you are worthy. You came here worthy and you'll leave worthy. So for all those reasons, it cuts you off from that truth.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm just, you know, thinking about, you know, what is it? What are we trying to say that, you know, and you've already said it, but, you know, I think the soul really just wants to, you know, connect to this light, right? You know, these things that are not attached to the brain, right? And I feel like that's just almost like fog between you and this light. And Adderall. I mean, I feel like everyone I know has had some sort of a prescription, and myself included. And it's been something that, you know, I've taken small doses of my probably the last 10 years on and off, and, you know, I've completely stopped because I realized how, I just felt like I was fighting like myself. But it was it's an addiction. It's an addiction that I had a really hard time, stopping, but I mean, that's right. What drugs are, they are addictive.
They sure are. And they can serve a purpose on some level. They can create a window into something, or they can create some relief. You know, Adderall and Xanax, you know, benzodiazepines, this other category, probably some of the most highly abused drugs out there. And yeah, they, I mean, one is a stimulant, and one is an anxiolytic, or for, you know, for anxiety, but they're both kind of numbing and cutting off the emotional experience. And sometimes, you know, people feel like they need that because the emotions are so intense, and that just creates anxiety. And so, you know, some people are just living in a fight or flight state. But the only way to connect to this cord, the spiritual cord, is to sort of work with that energy. You can't just shut it off. You can't just turn off the faucet. Mm-hmm. That, you know, sometimes you can. Sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need to turn off the faucet of like energy, of emotion, of what we're calling anxiety, or just that stimulated nervous system, because it's just too much. But ultimately, those things are never gonna get you to where you'd really like to be. Is to be able to channel the energy and allow it to flow through the body, so it's not just getting caught and blocked in these like parts of your body, getting triggered, spilling out into emotional reactivity, but like to actually create more flow, because energy is good. Energy, we want energy, but when it comes out in this sort of distorted and traumatized form, it's overwhelming. It's like, you know, it's like music versus noise. Like, you know, if it's just distortion and noise and static, you want to turn it off. But if you turn it off completely, you'll never hear the music. You'll never be able to tune to the frequency mm-hmm. of that spiritual music that's actually flowing through us. So yeah, drugs are they're a tricky game, and it's clearly an ongoing epidemic.
Yeah. And I hope for people that are struggling, they're able to, you know, get the help that they need, because it's hard. It's hard, and not everyone gets the help that they need.
And particularly creatives, those who, you know, people who, like we were saying, are prone to tuning in, are sensitive to energy, to the energy of themselves, to others, who need space to access that creative flow, and who are here to create and not just live in the transactional world, which is not to be dismissive of that. There are plenty of people who are here just to sort of play out that transactional game, and that's great. That may fill them up. That may, you know, be more aligned with their nature. But those who are more connected to that creative source of energy, that spiritual cord, drugs are actually really appealing. And drugs were really appealing to me because it was the only tool I knew of to get out of that conditioned mind and like forcibly open a window into an altered state, into a higher realm. Obviously, certain substances do that better than others, but yeah, the window will close and become quite the opposite if we don't learn some other tools.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fun conversation.
It has. It has. We've gone to various places that we did not expect.
Yeah, it's funny because we started out and I had said I was nervous to add in this new element, having the video on, but we got through it.
We got through it. Have you felt, I mean, I know that you felt that way before we started. As the conversation went on, have you still felt some of those?
Not really. I think, you know, it's important, you know, for all of us just to keep growing, right? And this was just another element that I was, you know, scared of for whatever reason. Like, why do I care? But it just, there's something that we get, you know, in our heads, like, oh, I can't do this. And so sometimes, you know, for me, just actually doing it and trying it, it's like, oh, wait, okay, it's not so bad. I got this.
That tends to be one of the best ways to challenge the fear or the belief, is to expose ourselves. And it's also also can be the scariest thing to do, which is why we don't all just confront our fears. But yeah, it's a tremendous validation to experience it. So is this feeling like a good place to wrap up, or somewhere to pivot?
I think it feels like a good place to wrap up. Unless there's something that you're somewhere you're being guided to go.
No, okay. Right here. I'm right here.
All right.
Not guided anywhere else. So yeah, this might be a good place to wrap up for today. And I think we're both open and excited to see where the journey goes, because your recent travels have sort of propelled this whole project and our relationship into a new area, as you have new experiences and as I continue to have new experiences. And so I'm excited to see where it goes and where you'll be next when we record our next episode.
And I'm excited to see where you will be next. We've got some traveling and a possible move coming up soon. Sure, so Daniel's being guided to go somewhere, I think in August, but we're not quite sure where yet.
And that's really something, that's really part of this intuitive journey when you start to surrender to this, is like how to now, and this relates back to the physical mind and higher mind, is like, I receive information, I have a pretty strong connection to this higher aspect of me. So I'll get pretty strong hits that like, you're moving, you're not re-signing your lease. But there's all these gaps of information. And so my thinking mind is attempting to fill all the gaps with different stories. And people ask me, where are you thinking? Like, have you started looking? And I'm like, no, that's not how this works for me. So it's interesting. There's a lot of growth in navigating that with other people and including people into my process and how I make decisions, and also quieting my mind when, you know, it's less than 2 months out from August 1st, and I still don't really know what's going to happen. And that's just how my journey unfolds. Things tend to happen very quickly, but I'll get information, you know, months and months prior. And it's just sort of riding that wave of like, okay, that's interesting. I'm getting a message about that, but I'm also not really meant to take any action. I'm just meant to ride the wave and see how it goes. So it's pretty difficult for the ego mind to, or it can be for the ego mind to adjust to that new flow, but it actually makes life much more fun, adventurous, and relaxing when you let go of some of those reins of control and just sort of appropriately reassign that to the higher mind, to the soul, to provide the information you're meant to receive when it's time. And then, you know, for the thinking mind, the ego mind, the physical mind, just to like pay attention, just to like hold, you know, hold present perspective and just sort of take it as it comes. And so that's my process. And I have navigated a lot around this move because I have at times had more fear and doubt stir up again, similar to the last leaps I've taken, and been questioning like, I need more information, but clearly I don't. So so that's where I'm at, riding that wave. And I imagine in this next month or two, some things will become clearer to me as well.
It's just so funny because I'm, you know, obviously I'm sort of going through this same thing where it's not that I'm not making a decision and I'm not trying to make people wait. And that's the other part. Like I have felt very supported recently by the people who have been around me. And I am so, so, so grateful because they have completely understood after I explained to them what we're talking about, that I'm really being led, right? And I'm being just guided in, you know, by my intuition. And it's hard to make plans.
Yep.
And the people that I've been around have been extremely supportive. And, you know, and then I'll also say to them, you know, if that doesn't, something doesn't work for you, please let me know. And just, you know, finding that balance. And it is a little confusing at times and things can be very last minute, but.
And you can appear to others as a bit more self-centered or selfish or whatever. And I think the truth is that it is a self-focused endeavor, but it's not really that connotation of selfishness in the sense of like not caring about others, but it's like, look, this journey, you know, in my humble opinion, true growth is about you. It's about tuning into you and what you need and living that out and getting comfortable with, you know, ruffling a few feathers, disappointing some people, rupturing some expectations because, yeah, the intuitive path, it doesn't take everyone's feelings into consideration. And you can't take everyone's feelings into consideration. That's what leads to all this people pleasing and all this sacrificial dynamics and relationships. And so, but yes, I have had to navigate some challenging, some very growth oriented experiences, particularly with family, when I'm guided to something that I know is going to is not sort of the expected social convention and particularly related to family. And that's going to, and when I know that's going to disappoint some people or challenge some expectations, that's when it can start to feel tense. But, you know, at the more you sort of walk this intuitive path, like it just becomes your highest authority. Cause you just know, if you don't listen to that, it's just going to hurt in some way. Not like be physically threatening, but maybe you get sick. I was sick for a long time because I wasn't listening to that part of me, and not to make it fear-based, but it's just like, you just know that it's not what your soul, what your heart wants. And so, you know, what's happened to me is as I've sort of met new community out here, people got to know me as the current iteration and version of myself. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really thwarting so many old expectations because they were meeting this new me. And literally one of my closest friends, Lauren, would be like, I would get to a party or something and she'd be introducing me to someone and she'd be like, yeah, and he'll be here for a couple hours and then he'll have to go because he has an early bedtime. And I was like, at first I was embarrassed. I was like, oh, that's like not really cool. But then I'm like, but that is true. Like I do have an early bedtime and I actually really enjoy that. And I have an early wake up time. And like, that's been really important for me. So like, I actually really appreciate people seeing me for that because it doesn't, you know, I'm not up against some of these old expectations of maybe older friends I have who I love, you know, mm-hmm. and who, you know, those relationships are super, super valuable too, but they know old versions of me who were very, very different. It's that's all part of it. Navigating people's expectations of you.
I think sort of the bottom line for me and the thing that I've really learned is that the more I listen in, the more I'm taking care of myself. And then the more I can take care of the people around me. So I think that's probably a good place to sort of end things for today.
I think so as well. Gotta fill up your cup yeah. And let it overflow.
Yeah, put your gas mask on first before you can help others.
Oxygen mask, yeah. Or gas
mask. Oxygen mask.
Yeah, I mean I guess if there's like poison around, yeah, gas.
That's
mask.
What I said. Now it's definitely a good place to end it.
Okay.
Okay.
Until next time, Jen. Looking forward to see where we each end up next.
All right, Daniel. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you would like to connect, please follow the podcast on Instagram at @DavidBowies_ghost or follow us individually at @JenKesslerArt and at @DrDaniel_Atkins.
David Bowie's Ghost looks forward to visiting with you again.